All right, let's dive into a Supreme Court case that's been making waves in the legal world, especially when it comes to arbitration. Southland Corberry v. Keating, a 1984 decision.
Ah, Southland v. Keating, yeah.
Now, this case might seem like ancient history to a law student like you, but trust me, it's way more relevant than you think. I mean, arbitration clauses are everywhere these days, right?
Absolutely.
They're in everything from those credit card agreements we barely read to those lengthy employment contracts.
Yeah.
Yep.
In this case, the Southland case really set the stage for how we deal with these clauses, especially when state laws try to step in and regulate them.
It really did.
So let's get to the heart of the matter. What we're really digging into today is this question of power, right? Mm-hmm. You've got a contract and it's got one of these arbitration clauses, and then a dispute pops up. And maybe there's a state law involved, too.
Right.
Who gets to call the shots? Is it the federal government flexing its muscles with the FAA, the Federal Arbitration Act?
Yeah.
Or does the state get to have its say?
That's the million-dollar question.
Can a state law actually put the brakes on an agreement to arbitrate? That's what we're going to untangle today. And we've got some interesting sources to help us out.
Oh, yeah.
We've got some advice on how to craft a killer podcast discussion, an AI analysis of the case, and then a good old-fashioned legal brief.
Awesome.
So we're going to dissect all of this, and hopefully by the end, you'll understand why Southland v. Keating is still such a big deal.
Absolutely. Let's break it down.
All right. So let's set the scene. What exactly went down to bring this case all the way to the Supreme Court? Who were the players? What was the beef?
Okay. So picture this. Southland Corporation. You know, the folks behind the 7-Eleven empire?
Oh, yeah. Those guys.
They used these franchise agreements with anyone who wanted to run a 7-Eleven store.
Standard practice, right.
Totally. And tucked away in these agreements was this little clause, a clause saying that any disagreements, any disputes, they had to be handled through arbitration. No going to court, straight to arbitration.
So no messy lawsuits, just everyone agreeing to settle things peacefully through arbitration.
Exactly. So the franchisees, folks like Richard Keating, they signed on the dotted line. They agreed to this whole arbitration thing. So what went wrong? What sparked the lawsuit?
Right. They agreed to play by the rules. So what happened? What went haywire?
Well, Richard Keating, along with a bunch of other 7-Eleven franchisees in California, they decided, you know what? We're taking Southland to court.
Oh, wow. So they went rogue.
They did, right there in California State Court.
Bold move.
Their complaints were all over the map. Allegations of fraud, breach of contract, breach of fiduciary duty, the whole nine yards.
Sounds messy.
It was. But here's the kicker, the thing that really matters for our deep dive.
Yeah.
Violations of the California Franchise Investment Law. It's called CFIL for short.
CFIL, got it.
They basically claim that Southland was playing fast and loose, not giving them all the info they needed, and engaging in some shady business practices.
So Southland allegedly didn't play by the rules,
yeah.
And the franchisees decided to fight back.
Exactly. And these individual lawsuits, they eventually snowballed into a massive class action.
Wow, so it was a whole franchise rebellion.
You could say that.
So we've got Keating and his fellow franchisees going, "See you in court, Southland," even though they had signed that agreement saying arbitration only.
Yep. And they were trying to use this California law, this CFIL, to get their day in court. So how did the California courts handle this whole mess?
Yeah, that's a good question. You've got an agreement saying arbitration, and then you've got the franchisees saying, nope, we're going to court. How did the California courts handle that?
The trial court in California, they took a bit of a middle-of-the-road approach.
Oh, really? So not picking sides completely?
Right. They said, okay, most of your claims, the stuff about fraud and breach of contract, those have to go to arbitration, just like you agreed.
So they upheld the agreement, at least for some of the issues.
Right. But then they said, hold on, those claims under CFIL, that California franchise investment law, those are different.
Interesting. So they drew a line in the sand.
Yeah. They basically said, this law, the CFIL, it's here to protect franchisees. It's important. These claims need to be heard in a regular court.
So the trial court is saying, we get it. You agreed to arbitration, but California wants to protect its franchisees, so some things are going to court.
Yeah, that was their take.
Okay, so the trial court splits the baby. Some claims go to arbitration, some go to court. I'm guessing Southland wasn't thrilled about that outcome.
Well, you bet they weren't. They were like, no way, we're appealing this. So they took it to the California Court of Appeal, and the Court of Appeal, they actually reversed the trial court's decision completely.
Whoa, a complete 180.
Yep. They said all claims, everything, including those CFIL claims, they all have to go to arbitration. That's what the contract says.
So the Court of Appeal was all about honoring the agreement, no exception.
Exactly. They were sticking to the letter of the contract.
All right, so now we've got one court saying some claims go to court, another court saying, nope, all claims go to arbitration. It's a legal tug of war at this point.
A real showdown. So naturally, this ends up going all the way to the top. The California Supreme Court had to step in and settle this. What did they say?
Yeah, what was the final word from the California Supreme Court? Who did they side with?
Well, the California Supreme Court took a look at everything and said, we're siding with the trial court on this one. They reversed the Court of Appeals decision.
Back to square one.
Basically, yeah. They ruled that the claims based on CFIL, that California franchise investment law, those were not subject to arbitration, at least not under California law.
So they upheld California's right to protect its franchisees. Interesting. What was their reasoning?
Their main point was that CFIL was put in place for a reason, a really important reason, to shield franchisees from franchisers who might be trying to pull a fast one.
Leveling the playing field, so to speak.
Exactly. They were worried that forcing these claims into arbitration would basically gut the protections that CFIL was supposed to provide.
Interesting. So they're saying arbitration might not be the best way to handle these kinds of disputes.
Right. And they also made a point of saying, look, our franchise investment law, it doesn't clash with the federal law on arbitration, the FAA.
So they're acknowledging the FAA, but saying California has its own interest to protect here.
Exactly. They were drawing a line in the sand.
So California's highest court is basically saying our state law is king in this situation, and it doesn't step on the toes of federal arbitration law. That's a pretty bold statement.
It is. And it's precisely this statement that caught the eye of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Because this was a direct challenge.
Right? No, absolutely. The California Supreme Court's decision basically threw down the gauntlet. It said, hey, the Federal Arbitration Act, the FAA, it's not the be-all and end-all here. States have a say, too.
So it was a power struggle, state versus federal.
At its core, yeah. And it raised this fundamental question. Can a state law create exceptions to the rule of arbitration? Can it say, hey, for these specific types of claims, arbitration is off the table, even if there's a contract that says otherwise?
That's a big question. So the FAA is now front and center.
Right, in the spotlight. And for the U.S. Supreme Court, the big question became, does the FAA have the authority to override state laws that try to limit the enforceability of arbitration agreements?
So the Supreme Court has to play referee.
Exactly.
Lay down the law, so to speak. So what was the specific legal question they had to answer? Can we boil it down to its essence?
The heart of the legal issue was, does the FAA preempt? And what I mean by preempt is, does it overrule, does it invalidate state laws like California's franchise investment law?
So does the FAA win?
In this case, the Supreme Court said yes. Yes, it does.
Okay, so round one goes to the FAA. What exactly did the Supreme Court say, and what were their reasons?
The Supreme Court issued a very clear decision. They held that the FAA, the Federal Arbitration Act, with its national policy favoring arbitration, it trumps conflicting state laws, even laws like California's CFIL, which was designed to protect franchisees.
So they're saying federal law takes precedence. What were their reasons for siding with the FAA? Why did they believe that the FAA had the power to overrule state law in this situation?
So the majority opinion was written by Chief Justice Berger.
Okay, Chief Justice Berger laying down the law.
He made three key points. Point number one, the intent of Congress when they passed the FAA back in 1925.
They're looking back at history.
Yeah, they dug into the historical context and they argued that Congress was crystal clear. Their goal was to overturn the long-standing judicial hostility towards arbitration agreements. For a long time, courts just didn't like arbitration.
Interesting. So Congress was trying to make arbitration more acceptable, more mainstream.
Exactly. They wanted to put arbitration agreements on equal footing with any other kind of contract. And Chief Justice Berger, he pointed to Section 2 of the FAA, which specifically says that the FAA applies to contracts involving commerce.
Involving commerce. So that's pretty broad.
Very broad. And Berger argued that this broad language meant that Congress intended the FAA to have a wide reach.
So Congress wanted arbitration to be a valid and enforceable way to resolve disputes, and they wanted it to apply broadly. But what was the second point in the court's reasoning?
Point number two, the preemption doctrine. This comes straight from the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution.
Okay, so we're getting into constitutional law now.
We are. The court said, because the FAA is a valid law passed by Congress under the Commerce Clause, any state law that tries to block what Congress wanted to achieve with the FAA is basically null and void.
Interesting. So the federal government is saying, We call the shots on interstate commerce, and if a state law interferes with our goals, it's out of here.
You got it. And in this specific case, they saw California's CFIL as trying to create a special exception for arbitration in franchise disputes, which they saw as directly undermining the FAA's goal of making arbitration agreements enforceable.
Makes sense. So the court is saying, California, you can't just carve out exceptions to a federal law because you don't like the outcome in certain cases. All right, so two solid points for the FAA. What was the third and final point in the court's reasoning?
The third point was all about the Commerce Clause, which, as we know, gives Congress the power to regulate commerce that crosses state lines.
Interstate commerce, right?
Yep. And the court said, look, these franchise agreements between Southland and its franchisees, they obviously involve interstate commerce. I mean, 7-Eleven stores are all over the country. They're not just a California thing.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Exactly. And they also addressed the argument that maybe the FAA should only apply in federal courts, not state courts. The majority said, no way. That would create chaos. It would lead to something called forum shopping.
Forum shopping? What's that?
Basically, it means people would try to game the system. They'd try to file their lawsuits in either state or federal court, depending on where they thought they'd get the most favorable ruling on arbitration.
So they try to pick the court that would give them the best chance of getting their way on the arbitration issue.
Exactly. And the court said, the FAA was designed to prevent this kind of shenanigans. It was meant to create a level playing field and make sure that arbitration is treated consistently across the board.
So a uniform approach to arbitration, no matter where you file your lawsuit.
That was the goal.
Makes sense. Okay, so we've got three solid reasons why the Supreme Court sided with the FAA. Now, I know Supreme Court decisions are rarely unanimous. Were there any dissenting voices in this case?
Oh, there were definitely different viewpoints. Justice Stevens, for example, he agreed with the majority's decision, meaning he also thought the CFIL claims should go to arbitration.
So he was on board with the outcome, but...
But he had some reservations. He wasn't completely comfortable with the reasoning. He put a lot of emphasis on what's called the savings clause of the FAA.
The savings clause? What's that all about?
This clause basically says that an arbitration agreement can be thrown out if there are general problems with the contract itself, like if there was fraud or duress, or if the agreement is unconscionable.
So the savings clause provides some wiggle room.
Yeah.
It says, even though we like arbitration, we're not going to enforce an agreement if there were fundamental problems with how it was made.
Right. And Justice Stevens was saying, look, if a state law treats arbitration agreements the same way it treats any other contract with a similar defect, then maybe that's okay. But CFIL, California law, it specifically targeted arbitration agreements in franchise disputes, and that's where it crossed the line.
So for Justice Stevens, the problem wasn't that California was trying to regulate contracts. The problem was that they were singling out arbitration agreements for special treatment.
Exactly. And Justice Stevens also expressed concerns about the power dynamics in franchise relationships. He was worried that franchisers might have too much power over franchisees. And he was basically saying, hey, we need to be mindful of these potential power imbalances.
So he was echoing some of the policy concerns that were behind the California law. He was saying, we need to protect the little guy.
Exactly. He saw potential tension between the broad power of the FAA and the state's ability to regulate contracts in a way that protects their citizens.
Okay, so Justice Stevens had some nuanced concerns. But what about the other justices? Were there any outright disagreements with the majority opinion?
There was a strong dissent from Justice O'Connor, and Justice Rehnquist joined her. They had a very different take on the whole thing.
All right, let's hear it. What did Justice O'Connor have to say? What was the basis of her dissent?
Her main argument was about the original intent of the FAA. She said, if you look at the legislative history, it's clear that Congress meant for the FAA to be a procedural statute.
A procedural statute. What does that mean in this context?
It means that the FAA was supposed to dictate how courts handle arbitration agreements, how they should process them. But it wasn't meant to create substantive rules about arbitration that would apply in all courts, both federal and state.
So Justice O'Connor is saying the FAA was just supposed to be a set of guidelines for federal courts. It wasn't meant to tell state courts what to do.
Exactly. And she and Justice Rehnquist argued that Congress never intended for state courts to be bound by the FAA's rules about the enforceability of arbitration agreements. They thought the majority opinion was stretching the meaning of the FAA way beyond what Congress had originally intended.
So they're saying the majority is overreaching. They're giving the FAA way more power than it was ever meant to have.
That was their main point. But the majority, they pushed back pretty hard on this historical interpretation. They said, no, you have to look at the actual words of the FAA, especially Section 2, which talks about contracts involving commerce. And they said the overall purpose of the FAA was clearly to make arbitration agreements enforceable nationwide.
Okay, so we've got a fundamental disagreement about what the FAA was really meant to do. So, big picture, what's the lasting impact of Southland v. Keating?
This decision really put a stake in the ground. It solidified the FAA's power to preempt state laws that try to mess with arbitration agreements. It's been cited in countless cases since then and has shaped the way we think about arbitration law.
So it's not just some dusty old case. It's still very much alive in the legal world.
Oh, absolutely.
Why is this case so crucial for law students to understand?
Because it teaches a fundamental lesson about the relationship between federal and state law. The key takeaway is that states can't just create special rules or roadblocks for arbitration agreements.
So they can't discriminate against arbitration.
Right. If a state wants to protect consumers or regulate specific types of contracts, they usually have to do it through general contract laws that apply to all contracts equally. They can't just target arbitration. And this has huge implications for legal practice. You're going to see arbitration clauses all over the place in all sorts of different legal areas.
So understanding Southland can help you figure out whether these clauses are actually enforceable.
Absolutely. Even when state law might seem to suggest otherwise.
Can you give an example of how this plays out in a real-world situation?
Think about your cell phone contract.
Oh, yeah. Those things are a nightmare.
Right. And almost all of them have arbitration clauses.
They sure do.
Now, imagine a state legislature says, you know what? These arbitration clauses are really unfair to consumers. We're going to ban them in cell phone contracts.
So the state is trying to protect its citizens.
They are, but because of Southland v. Keating, it would be very difficult for them to pass a law specifically targeting arbitration clauses in cell phone contracts. They'd probably have to rely on more general contract law principles, like arguing that a particular clause is unconscionable or something like that.
So they can't just say, no more arbitration in cell phone contracts.
Nope. They have to find other legal avenues to challenge these clauses.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's a very practical case. It has real-world implications.
It does.
Let's do a quick recap of the key legal concepts from Southland. What are the big takeaways?
The big one is FAA preemption, the idea that the FAA can override state laws that try to limit arbitration. And then there's the scope of the FAA. It applies to a wide range of contracts, anything involving commerce, and it's enforceable in both state and federal courts. And don't forget the savings clause, which allows you to challenge arbitration agreements using traditional contract defenses.
So the FAA is powerful, but it's not all powerful. What are some of the trickier aspects of this case? Things that law students might find confusing.
One thing that trips people up is the distinction between procedural and substantive law.
Ah, yes, the classic procedural versus substantive debate.
Right. The dissenting justices saw the FAA as primarily procedural, but the majority said, no, it has substantive effects too. So understanding the court's reasoning there is important.
Okay, so understanding how the court classified the FAA is key. What else?
The concept of forum shopping and how the FAA tries to prevent it is also important. And finally, remember that even though Southland limits what states can do with arbitration agreements, it doesn't completely eliminate their power to regulate contracts generally.
So states still have some control over contracts, but they can't just single out arbitration for special treatment. All right, so if we had to sum up the core rule of law that Southland v. Keating established, what would it be? Give us the TL duck.
Here's the nutshell version. The Federal Arbitration Act creates a national policy that favors arbitration for resolving disputes that come up in contracts related to interstate commerce. And that policy trumps state laws that try to limit how enforceable those arbitration agreements are, especially if those limitations don't apply to all contracts in general.
Southland v. Keating. It's amazing how a case from so long ago can still have such a huge impact.
That's a landmark case.
A real game changer.
It is.
And I bet, as you continue your legal studies, you'll bump into the principles from Southland again and again.
Oh, you definitely will.
So, as you're learning about all this, think about the big picture. You've got the federal interest in promoting arbitration as a way to resolve disputes quickly and efficiently, and you've got states that want to protect their citizens through consumer protection laws and other regulations.
That tension is always there.
Always there.
Yep.
And Southland addressed that tension. It provided some answers, but the conversation is far from over.
It's an ongoing debate.
Thanks for geeking out with us on this deep dive.
This was fun.
Always a pleasure.